Starting.
Hello and welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today I have, I guess, one of the biggest advocates for bringing the client, bringing you into the process instead of making it something that's just an Excel sheet to follow, which is probably the stupidest thing in the world, but people still do it because they feel like life is this laboratory where everything needs to be perfect, but they don't realize that there is so much more to numbers, there is so much more to data, which is why I hate receiving data without like qualitative measures, like measures of how you feel, measures of what are things outside of these numbers that you can class as feeling a win, not just seeing a win. And above all, you guys know how much I hate the scales. You know how much I freaking hate metrics of numbers and figures dictating your life, especially the scales. Like, the scales are the stupidest thing in the world to even put your worth on, because you can have a really good day and step on the scales and that ruins your mood. Or you could be feeling shitty and want to step on the scale to justify why you're feeling shitty, just to rub salt into the wound itself. So with that, I'm going to introduce Gary by allowing him to talk about why behavior change is so important, and him being someone who has programs based on this, how goal achievement, how habits, how where you put your focus is more than just numbers on a spreadsheet.
Hi, well, thanks for inviting me on. That's very good of you. So I've been a personal trainer 30 years, and I train a lot of personal trainers now myself. And in my research, I use personal trainers to deliver weight management courses. And one of the things that came out of that research was clients often take on personal trainers, even though psychologically they're not ready to change. And I thought that was fascinating, because I thought, why would anybody start work with a trainer if psychologically they weren't ready? And so then I decided, well, maybe we need more skills in behavior change then, to make sure that when we get our clients, we get them, we know how to get them psychologically ready. And so over the past decade, I guess, I've been doing research into behavior change and how you help somebody make a behavior change, what things you need in place in a program, and that type of thing. So that's kind of a quick overview of my background, as it were.
You said something very important there. Someone thinks they're ready for change and they get a trainer, they get a coach, thinking that this coach holds all the answers, and just by having this coach, they're going to see success, without realizing there is work to put into it. But a lot of the time, the work they think they need to put into it, this is something I see a lot with someone who is way too busy to slow the hell down to even grasp what they really need to do. But their idea of making progress is grinding themselves to the ground, or this meaning of perfection, or needing to do things to unrealistic expectations without realizing that there are steps to behavior change. So maybe you can talk about those steps and what you see mostly are the barriers to change.
Okay. So I think you're right. I think people take on a trainer and they expect the trainer to have all the answers. And as I say, when I'm training trainers, you haven't got all the answers. The client has actually got all the answers, and it's down to the trainer to help the client find those answers. There is no magic formula for weight loss. And my favorite mantra, and people sometimes get their back up to the, but I always say to people, it's your lifestyle that got you fat, and only changing your lifestyle is going to get you thin again. And you have to buy into that. So there's no quick fix. So it's a case of finding out what you're doing and then finding different little things that you can do to change it. And it's a slow process. I think because of social media, everybody wants the 6-week fix, the 12-week fix. And yeah, you can do that if you want. But the problem with that is you haven't addressed the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is you've got a bunch of lifestyle habits that aren't serving you well. And so that's what you need to work on. And so you need to find ways to change these underlying habits so as they start to serve you better. Now, I've said change habits there, but you can't change a habit. That's a complete misguided kind of notion. You can establish a new habit, but the old habit will always be there. And that's why people yo-yo diet, because they do something new and they think, oh yeah, that's it, I fixed it. And then they do it for a few weeks and stuff goes on and life happens, or as the Americans like to say, shit happens. And then it starts to go wrong, and slowly the old habit creeps back in. The reason we have habits is to save our brain doing a load of processing. It's just so as it's easy to do, we don't have to think about it. And so we've always got those old habits there. And if we don't consciously think about the new habit that we're trying to establish, we will very quickly slip back to the old habit because the brain's going, oh, I know how to do this. This is the easy way. And so when we're trying to establish these new habits, it has to be a conscious effort. You have to think every day, or when you suddenly feel hungry, it's like, okay, what could I eat now? Now, rather than let the habit control it, which might be go for a snack or chocolate or whatever it might be, you have to consciously think, what could I choose now that will serve my goals? And this is why goals are so important, because if you've got a goal and you've had that, and that goal is emotionally anchored, in other words, it's got a real pull for you, you really, you know what it will feel like, what it will taste like, what it will be like if you achieve that goal, then it's emotionally anchored. And so now every time you feel like, I don't know, going for a takeaway or a pizza or a bottle of wine or whatever it might be, you can say to yourself, does that move me towards my goal or away from my goal? 9 times out of 10, if it moves you away from your goal, you won't do it. And so now you're making conscious decisions. You're not just doing things because, oh, I'm a bit hungry. Oh, grab a snack. It's like, no, I've got to think about this. I've got to do this properly. Now, with time, and that can be a long time as well, it does annoy me when people go, it takes 6 weeks to establish a habit. It takes 12 weeks. It doesn't. If you look at the research, it can be as long as 265 days before a habit's established. So it very much depends what your old habits were. How long have you had them? If you've done something for the last 40 years in your life, you are not going to undo that in a hurry. It's going to take a long time before your brain accepts, oh, this is a new way of doing it. This is a better way of doing it. And so you're going to have to consciously make those decisions for a long time. And then with time, they will slowly become a habit, a properly established habit. But it's not quick by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, go on.
That was one thing I'm going to say. We'll bring in the relapse later, but it's a slow process and people feel like doing things a little at a time isn't even worth it. It's not worth their money. It's not worth their time. They're not maximizing everything. And this is something I say all the time, but it's ridiculous if you think you need to do big steps to have your money worth it or your investment worth it or you getting a trainer or a coach worth it, because you're doing something you never did before. And if you keep trying to move in big steps and leaps and bounds, you're going to stay in the same place, because that's exactly why you keep failing. And something else you said is our brain loves easy, but we always try to complicate what is already made simple, because social media makes it look like, hey, look at this new recipe, look at this new recipe, look at this fancy thing. So that's one thing there. And if we can just have a routine of doing things simply, when like, oh, life is always crazy. So the thing is, you kid yourself thinking that life is going to get any easier, because until, like you said, until you address the lifestyle things, the lifestyle is always going to be an issue that stops you from making any progress, because it's always going to be crazy because of the expectations you've already developed on yourself. And then you mentioned goals. I hate the word goals. I usually use the word North Star, but this comes back to what I wanted to talk about before as well, which is the weight loss thing. people start anything with just the goal on weight loss. And if you're putting just the goal on weight loss, you're always going to fail because there is no feeling to that. The only feeling to that is when you see the scale go down, yay, I feel amazing. Oh no, it went up. Oh, I feel like shit, I failed. So you need to get your head out of weight loss and realize that is not a goal. That is a step along the way. But if you cannot get your lifestyle in check, there is no actual outcome that's going to happen because you're going to keep relapsing because the habits never die away. You need to build them, relapsing back to the yo-yo cycle. So maybe you can touch on the many things I just said.
Well, you can look at when you look at why people make change, from a psychological perspective, they have what we call a surface need and a driving need. Now, the surface need will be the weight loss, because on the surface, oh, I want to lose weight, that will make me feel better. But actually, if we were to dig into the psychology of it, the driving need might well be, I'm going to be healthier, I'll live longer, I'll be able to play with the kids when I'm older, I'll be able to get into better clothes or whatever it might be. So you kind of have to find out what the underlying need is. And so you're right. I think weight loss is a lousy goal because it's great all the time. The needle on the scales, I mean, don't have needles on scales these days. It's all digital, but it's great all the time. Numbers are going down, but the minute that number stays still or even goes up a pound, it's like, oh, it's a catastrophe. It's the end of the world. That's it. I've ruined my diet and blah, blah. Totally demotivates you. You drop out of the program and then we're back to square one again. And if anyone that's ever tried to lose weight, if you kind of were honest with yourself and look back over your history of weight loss, you'll see the same pattern. Oh, I lost some weight. I lost weight really quickly. Then it started to plateau and then it went up a bit. Oh, and then I just dropped out. I let it go. So weight really isn't telling you what's going on. It's inaccurate. Weight loss is not a linear thing. If it was, it would be great because then you could rely on, oh, whatever I'm doing, yeah, that's working. My weight's going in the right direction. Weight loss never goes like that. It goes up and down, round the houses and God knows what. But it's really quite a rubbish indicator, especially for women with menstrual cycle and everything else. Then when you've got water retention, so your weight's going to go up then and things changing and you're like, it just don't use it. So it's there, but it's not really a very good goal.
And it doesn't really reflect what your body looks like, to be honest.
Well, I always say when a client comes to me, they'll often say, because I don't really work with clients that often now. But often when they come to me, I need to lose a stone or half a stone or whatever it might be. And I'll say to them, I can't really do that. And they're like, but well, you're meant to be an expert in this. I'm like, I'll tell you what I can do. I can help you get into a dress size smaller. Is that any good? And they're like, oh, God, yeah, that's what I want. I was like, well, why did you talk about weight then? Well, because that's what I always do. It's like, well, yeah, but that hasn't served you very well in the past, has it? You've always done it. And look what's happened. It's like the analogy I always use to them. I said, it's like driving your car and you hear a noise in the engine. So the noise in the engine is the equivalent of, I want to lose weight. Oh, sorry, you've looked in the mirror and the noise in the engine is the equivalent of, I've looked in the mirror and this dress is a bit tight or these jeans are a bit tight or whatever it is. I said, so now you stop your car and rather than look at the engine, which is where the problem is, you look in the boot and you go, I don't understand that. I can't see that.
That is actually that is perfect, because something that I see a lot is that when clients come to me, because I'm big on the asking questions, because I always say, you need to help me through this. You need to teach me, because I am not in your shoes and I don't know what's going on in your head. So you need to teach me right now. They think that we're supposed to guide them along the way, but over time they slowly learn. No, you need to slow down and ask yourself the questions. Get curious, because I can't answer them for you. You need to teach me this because I don't know what's going on in your life. But when someone comes to me complaining about the way they feel or a scale weight or feeling like they're off track or like everything's going wrong, blah, 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 and they bring it to feeling fat, feeling whatever it is, it's like, yeah, okay. Well, it leads down to a discussion where eventually, like it happened today, She feels out of control. There's too much stress at work. The kids are sick and she feels out of control of her life. So then she decided she needed to step on the scale to now rub the salt in the wound. And then all of a sudden she feels like she can't even like bother investing in herself because she feels like her whole life is off track because she put all of that weight on the scale instead of realizing, hey, you need to slow the fuck down and see what you can actually manage instead of pulling the plug altogether and going back to square one and then going down the restriction pathway, which when she came to me, she was pretty much eating. Her old coach had her on 900 calories. No wonder she couldn't stick to it and busted her. Like, it was a mess, her menstrual cycle, everything. But she fell down that path because if it's not extreme, what's the whole point in doing it? You can't mess in, well, meddle in the middle when shit goes crazy. Like, you don't need to do extremes all the time. Just because you're doing the bare minimum doesn't mean, hey, I'm not worth the investment now. I'm just going to do shit on my own and try to manage this on my own and then pull the plug all altogether. It is worth your investment because this is a lifestyle thing. This is a lifestyle choice. And you wrote it in one of your posts. Maybe you can also bring that in here, is losing weight is a lifestyle choice. And losing weight isn't even the goal. It's what happens to feel more confident, to wear that sexy dress that's a size lower. And bring in with that, reflection is probably the most important thing because it's not about other people misunderstanding you. It's that you don't even know yourself. You misunderstand yourself.
Yeah, I always say to people, you need to think of this A as a lifestyle journey, but the way people classically kind of try to lose weight is they join things like Slimming World, Weight Watchers, these type of things. And then they embark on this, like you say, extreme diet, some type of radical change where you're eating three crisp bread a day and a tomato or something stupid. And yeah, you'll see results in the initial stages because you're losing a load of water out your body. But what you're doing when you do those type of radical changes where you think, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this really strict diet and I'm going to exercise every day and blah, blah. You've got a whole bunch of changes. So you've got a really wide spectrum of changes. Now, willpower is a finite resource. And so if you were trying to spread your willpower over all of these things, there's a pretty good chance you're going to fail because your willpower is going to run out pretty quick. So we need to kind of flip this on its head. So I always say to people, think of it as a reverse pyramid. So a pyramid's wide at the base and goes up to a point. Now, that's the way traditional weight management normally works. Loads of changes, that's the wide base. And then slowly, though, you drop them because your life gets in the way and you end up back at the point. And so you're back to square one with no changes. So we need to turn that upside down and start with a couple of small changes. Now we've got lots of willpower for those changes. And so now we can do them for the next 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. And they start to become pretty easy to do. And clients come back to me and go, oh, that's really easy. I can do that. I don't notice I'm doing that. That says to me, if you don't notice you're doing it, that most probably fits your lifestyle then. So, okay, we'll stick with them. Let's try a couple of other changes, just small things. And they go off and do them. And if they come back and they're finding it easy, not noticing, we carry on. And so we're building on the success rather than let's change everything. And slowly we just lose them one at a time. We need to be kind of a bit circumspect. One of the things I always say to people, they come to you and you can say this to anyone. And they go, oh, yeah, right, I need to lose a stone. And I say to them, look, you didn't get up this morning, look in the mirror and go, oh, God, a stone. Where did that come from? It's like it happened over 10 years, 15 years, whatever. I said, so why is it then that you're now expecting to get rid of it in 6 weeks? I said, if it's taken a year, 10 years, it might take that long to get it back off. I said, so you kind of got to start thinking about this as, and I put a post up the other week, you were talking about it earlier. When you get to that point where you think, oh, I need to get fitter, I need to get healthier, I need to lose weight, you are now at the summit of the mountain. You're at the top. It's as bad as it's going to get. Accept it. That's it. You've got two options now. You're now on the summit of Mount Everest, and you've got two choices. You can either jump off. You'll get down pretty quick, but actually, you're most probably not going to be in too good a shape, because generally, jumping off a mountain doesn't do you a lot of good. Or you can walk back down the other side, and you can take it easy, and you're going to miss your footing now and again, but at least you'll be in one piece when you get to the bottom. And that's a far better journey, and you can enjoy the views on the way down. And so that's what you've got to start thinking of your kind of health, wellness journey as. It's my trip back down the other side of the mountain, and it's one step at a time, and be careful where you put your feet, enjoy the view, and you'll get there in the end, and you'll be in good shape when you get to the bottom. So it's really is flipping your mindset to, let's just look at all the other good things. And this is why weight loss is really no good, because as you get a bit fitter, as you get a bit more active, as you lose a bit, little bit of body fat, you've got more energy. So that's a real plus. It's like you're sleeping better. That's a real plus. It's like all these little things that you're maybe overlooking. So forget the scales. Look at where the other benefits are. I'm eating healthier. That means my heart's a bit better. I'm most probably going to live a bit longer. I'll be able to play with the kids a bit more. So start to look for other things that are advantageous that will kind of help you on that journey, and just enjoy the journey. It shouldn't be purgatory and, oh, it's such a restriction and I can't do this and I can't have a drink. It's like you've got to have a life. It's just adjust it a bit and accept that it will take a while.
That part is actually really important, because if you're not enjoying the journey, then what's the point? And the fact also that you mentioned that you're meant to enjoy life in itself and a drink here and there, but the thing is, you're going to have to say no to that drink. You're going to have to say no to life when you need to buckle down in a fat loss phase, but fat loss phases aren't forever. And because I want to tie in what you just said to something that I see a lot of people struggle with, it's when you finish from a fat loss phase and then you then go into a diet break or needing to eat a little bit more to then prep yourself for the next lot of fat loss. But because you've been so tired, this is why weight loss is the worst goal ever, because now what are you going to do? Like, if all you see is success of the scale going down, what's going to happen when it's time to actually have a diet break? And now the scale's going to fluctuate a hell lot more and maybe trend upwards a little. But that's where the whole, okay, now you were lacking energy before. You were hungry as hell. You were craving. You were missing out on social life. You were missing out on all these things. But now you get them all back again. But all you're focused on is the fact that the scale just went up and you feel fluffy and your belly is now full and not empty and gurgling. But to you, that's bloated. To you, that's fat. Because your metric of success was trying to chase a smaller body.
Yeah.
But then you mentioned willpower. And I wanted to just add on this one as well, is willpower becomes that much easier and something you don't need to rely on, because my willpower is shit. I just now have systems in place that allow me to just do the thing that I always do, because doing the alternative makes me feel like shit. And I can tune into that because I've been doing this for long enough. But you don't know what it's like to feel good because you've never allowed yourself to feel good. So you keep going back to the same feeling, which to you is a dopamine rush, instead of the fact that it actually makes the rest of your life more miserable, because now you feel like shit. And because you feel like shit, you're eating like shit. And because you're eating like shit, you feel shit. And it's this cycle. But in this post you put up, it's your willpower becomes easier the more you sleep, the more you manage your stress, the more you eat well, because now your hunger's regulated. Your cravings aren't as strong. You're feeling better. You're having the energy and you want to keep doing the same thing over because it makes you feel a certain way.
Roy Barmaster, who's one of the kind of leading researchers in the States in willpower, he has this theory of what he calls the brain glucose theory. And he says willpower is based in the brain because it's a psychological process. But the brain is an obligate user of glucose. So therefore, if you're not eating regularly and keeping good blood sugar levels and you're stressed all the time and you're kind of working at 100 miles an hour, all of those things take blood sugar. And so basically they're kind of all dipping into the willpower tank. Whereas if you can get your stress under control a bit, slow down a bit, eat properly, you've now got sufficient glucose available to drive the willpower when you need it. So it's really important that you look after yourself, because actually part of looking after yourself looks after your willpower. And so getting things like that under control is so important, because it's going to be a long-term process.
Yeah, and I guess this can actually want to bring this more into now the barriers of change, because change is a hard thing. And like we mentioned, habits are something you can't just get rid of. And an analogy, I don't know whether you've ever heard me talk about it, you probably haven't, but I have this analogy of cables. We have very thick cables in our head, and they're charged with all the electricity. Like, it makes sense, because our brains send electrical currents and they send them through the strong cables that are already there. But to form new ones, you're going to have to start somewhere in a place where no cables exist. You're going to need to start laying that foundation. But the thicker cables are going to get more charged because they're bigger, and it just naturally gravitates to that. But over time, this cable gets bigger. Over time, this one atrophies, but it never dies off. But you can easily just shoot the electric current back down on there again. And are you going to keep trying to expand that one? Or are you going to then mind manage yourself? And I guess Johari window, let's bring that in soon.
Yeah.
But then you can Johari, Gary will tell you what that is, your way back to realizing, hey, no, I can recognize what I'm doing. I need to sit with this. I need to realize why I'm doing this, what circumstances, what emotions am I feeling? Instead of just, as I say, are you just going through the motions and avoiding the emotions? Or are you allowing yourself to experience and learn yourself in the process of becoming the person you want to become?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's going to take a long time. One of the things you can do to kind of monitor your progress, and I know we've weights lousy, but you do need some type of metric, because that what that will do is, when you see things going in the right direction, it will build your intrinsic motivation. Because one of the things that builds intrinsic motivation is capability. And so if you've got some type of measure that shows you things are going in the right direction, you then feel more capable. And we found in my research that one of the things that correlates with weight loss, reduction in fat, reduction in waist measurement, is self-efficacy. So your kind of self-belief, your self-confidence. And so one of the things I get people to do early on is keep mood and energy diaries. Now, that might sound very complicated, but it isn't. It's like all you do is in the morning when you get up, when you first wake up, on a scale of 0 to 10, just scribble on a bit of paper or put it in your phone on a note, however you want to record it. 0 being I've got no energy at all. 10 being I'm absolutely buzzing and jumping out of bed. And you score yourself there. And then mood, how do I feel? Am I gloriously happy, in which case I'm at a 10? Or am I really down in the dumps and feel lousy? I'm at a 0. And so you score that. So it's a 2-second process. Score those two things. You then do the same at lunchtime, 12, 1 o'clock. Same around tea time, 5, 6 o'clock. And then similar when you just before you go to bed. So now you've got 4 points of data through the day. You now do that for a week. And really, you should do this before you make any changes, because that's going to give you your baseline where you're at the moment. Now you can slowly start to make changes, whether it be going for a little walk for a bit longer, taking the dog for a longer walk, having breakfast where you've been skipping it, eating a bit more fruit, whatever it might be, some small change that you're going to make. You keep doing your diaries, and then you can look back, and it's this self-awareness thing. And this is where it ties into the Johari window. And you can kind of compare your original data, because you might be, because 2 or 3 weeks in, you might be thinking, oh God, this isn't really working. Not much is happening. Because it's a slow process. But actually, if you look at your data, it will show you actually things are starting to improve. Your mood's a little bit better in the morning. You've got a little bit more energy. And so seeing things like that is really quite powerful. And being truly aware of what's going on in your body. Now, the Johari window basically puts a spotlight on you. So it kind of says, what do you know about yourself? What do you know to be true? and you might think, oh, I'm a strong person, or I'm a great mum, or whatever it might be. And then one of the other windows is, what do you think other people see when they look at you? And that might be, they think I'm rubbish, and they think I'm really fat, and blah, blah, because you've got this misconstrued view. And then you kind of ask people what they really think, and it's totally different to what you think. So what you think people think and what people actually think are often very different. And so it's a case of just being honest. And with time, what will happen is your self-awareness will get bigger. That window will kind of expand, and you will understand yourself truly. But understanding yourself is really important. Everybody isn't judging you. When you go out, I always say to people in the gym, new people to the gym often think, oh, I'm in here. And especially if you're a bit overweight and you're a bit body conscious, you think, oh, everybody's looking at me. It's horrible. I'm not doing this exercise right. And I say to them, I said, I could go around this whole gym now and I pretty much guarantee nobody's even noticed you, because they're all in their own little world. But your perception is, everybody's looking at me, it's terrible. I said, so you need to kind of adjust that perception and get a truer feel for who you are.
And at the same time, who gives a shit if everyone's looking at you? Who are you doing this for? And what does it matter what their opinions are? Because in the end, who are they to you and why do they matter? And a lot of the time we put our, like, we hold ourselves back because we worry so much about what other people think, whether or not they're thinking about us. And I laughed a little while you were talking, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and it allows me to form my own views and my own ideas and all this kind of stuff. And something that stuck with me that I say a lot now is, you are not who you think you are, and you are not who others think you are. You are who you think others think you are, because you are always trying to uphold a standard just to fit the status quo or to look good on social media. Like, people do dumb shit lifting maxes all the time because they want to look like a strong person all the damn time, so they stop themselves making progress because they won't lift in hypertrophy ranges that demand you to use a lower weight. That's an example. But the same thing with people leaving a diet. Oh, what will they think of me? Oh, she put on fat, she's getting fat, what happened to her weight loss? Like, we put these stupid ideologies in our head, making us feel like we're gonna fail because all of a sudden we're not chasing the weight going down anymore. Oh no, now we're gonna get fat. No. It's not a matter of, if you're not chasing the scale going down, you're gonna automatically get fat. But these are all, because I want you to talk about how self-talk can hold us back and our rehearsed verses, like, I can never shift this belly fat, I'm always like this, I've always been like that, it's just something I've always done. Like, we don't even realize we say this stuff. And we get stuck in this fixed mindset because we don't allow ourselves to slow down. And we don't even realize that that's the case. So how exactly does self-talk stop us from changing?
And your reality, if we were to be in the same room, if I was over there with you now, although we were in the same room, we'd see very different rooms. Because I would pick up on certain colors, shapes, whatever, and you be picking up on something different. So it's exactly the same room physically, but from a reality perspective, completely different, because our realities are formed by our brain. And part of that is this self-talk. The things we say to ourselves create our reality, because the brain doesn't like things not matching what it thinks reality is. That's called cognitive dissonance. And the brain really doesn't like that. It likes everything to match up. And so we tend to say things, what kind of those rehearsed verses that kind of keep us in line with the reality that we think exists. But you can change that reality. And one of the key things to do with your rehearsed verses is, I always say to people, be the annoying child. And they go, what do you mean by that? I said, well, if you've got a kid and you say to a child, you need to tidy your room up, the child will often go, why? And you go, well, because a tidy room shows that you're kind of organized or whatever. But why is that important? And so you kind of start going down this route, and the kid just keeps going, but why? And so you need to do that with your self-talk. So when you're kind of saying to yourself, oh, I'm really rubbish and I can't stick to a diet, just internally say to yourself, is that true? What evidence have you got for that? I always say to people, put yourself in the dock. Imagine you're the barrister, and the barrister's going, okay, where's your evidence for that then? Show me where the proof is of that. And if you keep asking those kind of questions, you'll get to the real hub of the matter. So, like I said, when you say to yourself, oh, I'm rubbish at this, I'm not really good, think to yourself, well, is that really true? Have I got any evidence for that? Have I got evidence that maybe I'm a good person? Oh, I've been able to do that in the past. I've been bringing up this kid and she's turned out all right or whatever. So often, if you just let those thoughts run, they're going to take you in a direction you're not going to like, because you'll tend to go in the same direction every time. But if you start to question your self-talk, you can often change things very quickly, because, you know, like you say, you go in the gym and think, everybody's judging me. And then you just say to yourself, are they though? What evidence have I got that everybody's judging me? Nobody's come up to me and said, oh, you're really fat. Because people just don't do that. They're not interested. So now you have to go, well, I haven't really got any evidence for that. Maybe they're not judging me. Would that be true? Almost probably, yeah. No, nobody's paying much attention to me. Oh, so maybe they don't judge me. And so now we've gone on a completely different path. So it's just a case of listening to what you say to yourself. And we do it all the time, every day we do it, and we just let those thoughts run. But if you actually query them a bit, you can often get to what the real truth is. So don't just let these thoughts come and go. Police them a bit and get yourself back on track. Now, you hear people talk about, oh, you need to have a positive outlook. Positive thinking is good, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And positive thinking will work for you, providing it's realistic positive thinking. So it's no good just thinking, I'm all going to be positive and everything's going to be great and my fitness journey is going to be easy. Because I can tell you now, it won't be. And it's like somewhere along the line, things are going to go wrong. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to have a lousy day. You don't want to go to the gym. You don't want to eat healthy. That's fine. Live with it. They're bumps in the road. This lifestyle journey is not going to be a straight line. You're going to have good days and bad days. And if you can accept that from the outset and still stay positive with it, you're going to be in a lot better place. So the way you think is forming what your reality is. And it's up to you what you want to think. So when you start this journey, what do you want to think? Who do you want to be? And do it for you, not like you said, I agree with you 100%. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Who gives a toss? It's your life. It's your body. Do what you want with it.
Something I actually really want you to hop home on, something in particular for a lot of the rest of the podcast, but something that's really powerful in that is the way that we question ourselves as well is, we need to realize that we do not have proof that we can change, because there is no such thing as having proof for the future. And if all you've done is dumb shit your whole life, of course you're going to fear failure because you struggled in the past. And especially if you struggled so hard to get to where you currently are, and where you currently are is somewhere that you're completely miserable still, but you struggled there, you're going to keep coming up with stories on why you cannot do something completely different. Because, oh no, what if I get worse? Then I have to struggle all over again to get back to where I was, which I wasn't even happy there. So then I have to do even more hard work to get to where I want to be. And it's this ridiculous paradigm we put on ourselves based on past predicaments because we did dumb shit. And we don't realize that along the way, we're learning, we're becoming, we're not doing the same thing over and over again, which is why it is so important for you to actually be aware, to have that awareness, to question yourselves, to be aware of what it was that kept you stuck, to not do it again. And where you failed, realize it's a lesson and actually take from it. Don't just keep trying to move through the process. But one thing I want you to talk about, for God knows what else you can come up with for this, but Socratic questioning is something you just brought up. And it's probably the most powerful driver for change, because when we start to question ourselves, question our intentions, not only for now, but for the future, and also question past beliefs we've had, then we can enable ourselves to become more realistic with our reality, more realistic with, okay, So maybe I can turn this down a little. Maybe I am being a little bit of a perfectionist. And on the perfectionist note, because you said the identities thing, we come up with this, a lot of people hold themselves as perfectionists. If they're not doing it perfect, what's the point? But I would challenge you to what is perfect to you and why are you calling yourself a perfectionist? Or is this just a shell and mask that you're putting up because you fear change, you fear doing anything different? So you label yourself a perfectionist so that you don't look like a failure, so that you have something to hold a flag up against saying, well, I'm a perfectionist, so this is why I do things this way. So I'll let you talk about the perfectionism and then lead that into the Socratic questioning.
Okay. Couple of things you said there, which I think are really important. The first thing is, looking back is okay, as long as you look back and find your strengths. Don't worry about anything that went wrong, because you'll have learned from that anyway. So looking back's fine if you're going to look back at, oh yeah, I've done that in the past because I was able to do this or I was able to do that, and take strength from that. But the fact of the matter is, when you start now, today is a new day. You can do bugger all about what's happened. It's happened, it's gone, forget it. But what you do from here on in, you can write the future, because you're starting from now. And so your actions now will, to a degree, write the future. So as long as your actions are good, then your future is going to be pretty rosy. So don't worry about past, just start from now and look forward. The other thing is, I never talk about failure. Failure is feedback. If you ride a bike now, if you can ride a bike, I guarantee that when you learn to ride a bike, you either had stabilizers or training wheels, or your mum or your dad was holding your seat and you were wobbling along. But I guarantee you fell off God knows how many times. And then over weeks, maybe months, you slowly learned how to balance, and then you became really proficient on the bike. Lifestyle change is no different. It's a wobbly journey at the start, and we have a few trips and what have you, but they're not failures, they're feedback. The way we learn as a human being is by making mistakes. The only daft thing to do is not learn from the mistake. So when you do have a bad day where you have the bottle of wine or whatever, I always say to clients, I say, look, don't beat yourself up about it. Don't catastrophize it. It's not the end of the world. But what I want you to do at the end of the day is I want you to sit down and I want you to think to yourself, what could I have done differently today that would stop that happening in the future? And I say, as long as you can come up with an answer to that question, today's been a really valuable day, because now you've got another way of managing it. And so that's what your life's going to be like going forward. You're going to have lots of successes. You'll have the odd hiccup. But as long as you learn from the hiccup, crack on. So don't see it as failure. See it as feedback. Don't catastrophize it, because it isn't the end of the world. It's a learning process. It's how we learn. And be realistic in your outlook in terms of what you can achieve, what you can kind of get from it.
Yeah. And I guess in that, how can we use our own questioning tools? And how can, I guess, especially if you have a coach that uses the Socratic questioning model, aka I use that with my clients, mm-hmm. how can we teach them and the people listening to this podcast to become more aware of actually answering the questions in a way that serves them versus what they think wants to be heard, or just shooting an answer? Like, you see people just living like this, and as soon as someone asks a question, oh, this is the answer, without actually slowing down and actually answering the question as you, like you, and the way that answering it will actually lead you forward. So how can you, I guess, anyone who's listening to this, any of my clients listening to this, how can we facilitate the process of the questioning for them to give and have the answers for themselves?
Use a visualization technique, like I said to you before, about imagine you're in court. You're now in the witness box and you're going to make your statement, whatever it might be. Oh, this is really hard. I'm a lousy person. I've messed up my diet. My fitness isn't going well. I said, and now imagine the barrister on the other side. And the first question the barrister is going to ask you is, What evidence do you have for that? What is your evidence for that? And now you're going to have to think about, well, why do I think that? And then when whatever you come up with, whether it be, oh, because this girl looked at me funny in the shop or whatever, it's like, now you ask yourself the question, okay, so that girl looking at you funny in the shop, is that evidence that you're a bad person and you're rubbish? And that'll make you think about that. So it's just a case of, imagine the question that the barrister would ask you to try and get to the truth, to find out what the truth is. So just put yourself in your dock, in the dock all the time. I do it all, having done a PhD, the one thing you do learn is you question everything. And my favorite question, and it annoys my wife, is like, where's your evidence for that? And if you can't produce evidence for it, then it's most probably not founded in any truth, so you can just throw it away. So become skeptical, I think, is the thing. But just become skeptical about everything. So when you say to yourself, oh, I'm a rubbish person, like, well, where's your evidence for that then? And think it through. Where is the actual evidence? Very often there isn't any. It's just a thought that's coming to your mind. And if you give it any credence, it will stay there. But if you question it, you can chuck it away. It'll go in the bin.
There's this quote, I can't remember. It said, question everything and don't guess answers. Like, question everything, learn something, answer nothing is exactly how it's written. But it's more along the lines of, you want to question everything and assume nothing. Because the more that you assume, the more that you're putting those narratives in your head that you've not yet really dug into and questioned where they came from. Because a lot of the beliefs we have are actually coping mechanisms that have kept us safe through periods of trauma, through periods of distress. And the biggest thing that I'm realizing is people have either lost their friggin', like, their minds and they've gone completely lunatic, become complete loons because of COVID, or they acted as though nothing has happened and I'm fine and dandy, everything's perfect, I've got my way through, I just did what I had to do, without realizing, hey, there's a lot of shit that actually happened in your life and you suffered a tremendous load. Everyone did. And yeah, if you're not going to actually revisit that and try to pull apart how life changed, where your coping mechanisms started to come in or where they fell away, where your ambitions changed, where your beliefs about yourself changed, whatever it is that has changed in that process and what has been sacrificed and where you lost parts of yourself. Because we all lost parts of ourselves in that process. Mm. A lot of things had to change for us to be able to cope to get through all of that shit. But if you've never tried to just be, okay, things weren't perfect. Okay, life got me down. Okay, I struggled a shitload. I lost some friends. I lost this. I lost that. Whatever it is. If you're just going to push through and act as though nothing happened, it's going to keep rearing its head in ways that aren't actually conducive to you becoming your best self.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the right way to end the conversation, because I know you can speak a shitload on that.
Well, I love that statement at the start anyway, like, question everything. And I wish people would do that with social media, because people post stuff on there and people think, well, it's on social media, it must be true. It's like, question it. Who is this person? What's their background? What's their qualifications to even say that? So don't believe everything you see on social media, because most of it's complete and utter toss, quite frankly. It's just complete rubbish. It doesn't serve anyone any purpose at all. And the other thing that I think is quite important, and I learned this in that word, assume. Just remember that assume actually means it makes an ass of you and me. So don't
I just got it now. I always hear people say that and it literally just makes sense now. Assume you me. Okay. That's actually really gold. I've never seen it that way.
Yeah.
Continue on.
So yeah, assumptions, not good idea. Just don't. I mean, find the, and we're back to that, where's your evidence? So find good support. If there's no supporting evidence, then it's most probably not true. So yeah, don't take anything for granted. You can create your own reality from here on in, and it's the way you think will create your reality. So police your thoughts and and become a bit skeptical.
I love that. Police your thoughts. And that's exactly right. Like, what you think is your reality because your lens is different than everyone else's lens. And in that note as well, it's once, like, when you stop trying to assume everything and predict everything, you'll start to realize that things aren't really as they seem. And the thing is, there are things that are true on social media, but they're not true for you. They're true for a different person. Not every message is for you. So I sent you a really good quote in Instagram just then, but it's understanding the question provides half the answer, because the way that you understand a question is kind of shaping the way that you perceive it. Like, for example, someone will say something, you don't hear what's said, you hear what you think is being said in that meaning, and that tells you a lot about yourself. So understanding the question gives you half an answer, because what you hear in that question, write those thoughts down. Because every time I ask a question, I've now also added in this, I can't remember what podcast I got this from is, but when you ask the question, when you hear that question, write down all the immediate thoughts that come to your mind. Because a lot of them are negative beliefs. A lot of them are sabotaging thoughts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, trainers can be really guilty of this, because a client will say something to them, and because of what your reality is, you only hear certain bits of it because you've kind of got values and that you kind of put in place. So having good, true values is really important, and really listen and then really think it through and just accept that some of the things you think most probably aren't true. And like you say, it's a good idea to write them down, because then you can kind of, when you see it on paper sometimes, something I often say to people is, if it's not written down, it never happened. And because we know that when people write things down, it ingrains it in the brain a bit better. There's something about that process of writing on paper that makes it stick. So having a reflective diary is actually a really good practice, because you can kind of just write all your thoughts down at the end of the day, just spend 5-10 minutes, and then just look at them and go, yeah, okay, they're serving me well. That one's rubbish. I'm scrubbing it out. And with time, you can kind of really redefine what your thought process is, because you're able to look at what your thoughts are and police them and go, well, I'm chucking that one. I'm keeping that one. That's a good one. And go forward redesigning your thought process almost, because it's that thought process that's creating the life you've currently got. And it's that thought process that will ultimately create the life you want.
Yeah. And to sum all that up, writing things down gets clarity to your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because in your mind, you can't have any clarity, and you will always feel overwhelmed if it's something that's not written down, because we always catastrophize things in our head. It makes no freaking sense in our head. Write shit down, and that already is giving you a lot more clarity and a lot more direction than you realize. And if there's a hesitation to writing things down, question that. Question it. Because if there's a hesitation to writing things down, that says a shitload about what limiting beliefs you have about what you think is possible and what's not. And if you fear the possibility of change, because what if I can't keep doing this thing? Well, you need to question that as well. And that's where you lead yourself down a rabbit hole of discovering yourself and where you can possibly go. Once you let go of the negative beliefs, you'll end up discovering just by setting a pen to paper. So.
There's no such thing as a meaningless thought. Every thought has some type of response. If you look at cognitive behavioral therapy, we look at this loop of thoughts, behaviors, emotions. They're all interlinked. And which one comes first doesn't really matter. Sometimes it's a behavior that creates an emotion that creates a thought. Sometimes it's a thought that then creates a behavior, and then that brings an emotion. So if you think about eating rubbish, the thought might be, oh, I'm bored. The behavior is, I'm going to grab some chocolate. And the emotion might be, oh, I feel better because I've had chocolate. We can change any part of that component. So every thought is going to have some type of behavior, some type of emotion attached. And it can go either way, because a thought can bring on an emotion that can bring on a behavior. So understanding what our thoughts are and how they link to our behavior and to our emotion is really quite important. And so by writing them down, you can start to spot, oh, when I think that, I tend to do that. And then that makes me feel like that. Well, now you understand what that is. You can know which bit to change. It might be that you're always going to think that, in which case, well, let's do this behavior instead. And so now we've just changed that whole dynamic. So now when I think, oh, I'm bored, rather than, oh, I'm going to grab the snack. Right, I'm bored. I know what I'll do. I'm going to go for a quick walk around the block when I'm bored. And now the emotion will be, wow, that was great. I got energized a bit. I did something. So it's the same thought, but I've just now attached a different behavior and I've ended up with a different emotion. And I can do it the other way around. But if my emotion is I'm a bit depressed, all right, well, I'm going to eat something healthy. I eat something healthy. That's the behavior. Now my thought will be I'm eating healthily and that's helping with my kind of depression. So you can pick any component and change one of the components for a better component. And now you've got something that's serving you really well. But you can only do that process if you've recorded it, because then you can look at it in kind of when you've got a little bit of time and think, OK, how can I manage that better? And that's really what lifestyle change is about. It's about recognizing a behavior, an emotion, a thought, and thinking, is that serving me? Yes, great, I'll keep it. Or is that leading me where I don't want to go? Well, I'm going to bin it. I'm putting a new one in place.
That is the perfect way to end this podcast, because that is the crux of what leads to the changes that can actually last. It's realizing that you actually have the power. You have the driver's seat. You are the one that's in control of changing things once you get clear on it all. So yep. With that, I'm going to leave your Instagram in the bio. I know you have better places to possibly reach you. So is there anything else I can put in the
my Twitter is Dr. Gary Mend, so just M-E-N-D, so it's a shortened version of that. And my website is stagesofchange.co.uk.
Perfect. I will put them in the show notes. And I highly suggest you actually looking at Gary's Instagram, because there's a lot of things that you can just like see and try to question yourselves on, even though it's made for pretty much trainers and coaches. It will facilitate the process much more for your own awareness, because it's not going to just seem like you're getting questioned or interrogated. It's the fact that we never have the answers for other people's shit. No one else has the answers for my shit. I don't have the answers for someone else's shit, but we can facilitate discovering your shit and trying to make it not so smelly anymore.
And so on that upbeat note.
So with that, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And if you got any gems from this, I will say it over and over again. I get the most joy from hearing your takeaways, from getting messages from you girls, from anyone listening to this, saying that something resonated with you, something sparked some change, something made you think a little deeper. So with that, don't forget to rate the podcast. If you share it, don't forget to tag us, because I would love to thank you. And with that, you'll hear me on the next podcast. And don't forget to check out Gary's Instagram. So with that, bye.
Thanks for having us on.